Chapter 11, Extending Our Reach. Quote by broadcast journalist Soledad O'Brien, talking with Campabilities camper Braden. Braden, if you had to describe yourself, what would you tell people? Strong? Fearless? Lovable? Humble? Yeah. Photo description. Athlete from Central Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, CABV, Campabilities, Downhill Skiing. Winter Campabilities. My experiences during college volunteering for the Ski for Light program provided some of my earliest inspiration for campabilities. So, I was thrilled to see things come full circle in February of 2015 when the Central Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, CABV, in Utica, New York, under the guidance of Rehabilitation Director Kathy Beaver, put on a winter campabilities. CABV already held a summer campabilities. The winter program evolved as a way to promote independent living skills, including mobility, technology, socialization, and career awareness. The winter camp was held at Racket Lake in the heart of the Adirondack Mountains with 18 eager young campers. The families dropped their children off in Utica, and vans transported the children 2 hours up to the lake. The CABV camp itself is on a peninsula, and the only way to get there in winter is to drive across the lake on the ice, which is between 2 and 4 feet thick. Take a snowmobile or walk. Kathy Beaver and her staff decided to have campers walk the entire mile across the lake so they could understand its size and visualize the peninsula. The staff brought the luggage over in the vans. Everyone stayed in cabins with light and heat. Not all cabins had indoor bathrooms, however, so some people had to go outside to another building to use the bathroom. With temperatures that ranged between 2 degrees and below 20, this could be quite bracing. Over the entire long weekend, though, I think I was the only one who complained about the cold. Campers were broken into 3 groups, red, blue, and green, for snowmobiling, snowshoeing, ice fishing, cross-country skiing, sledding, downhill skiing, broom ball, and 2 indoor activities, technology and cooking. Broom ball is like ice hockey, but players wear sneakers and use a broomstick with a plastic broom-shaped paddle. Each camper received a wool hat with the camp logo in their group's color, which made it possible for sighted volunteers to see which group was doing which activity, even from a distance. A local snowmobile club volunteered to take the children snowmobiling, something most campers had not done before. First, each child felt the whole snowmobile, a bit cold without gloves, and got comfortable with the seat on the back. Then the whole group went out together, which meant 8 to 10 snowmobiles at the same time. Pure exhilaration lit the children's faces as they sped through the cold wind, engines roaring all around them. It was moving to see the excitement of the volunteers, too. They clearly felt very good about providing this new and thrilling experience. While one group was snowmobiling, another group was ice fishing with Adam Dwyer, one of my graduate students. Adam had to take his gloves off in the bitter cold to put the worms on the hooks and show each camper the rod, fishing line, hook, and reel. The campers also had to take their gloves off in order to explore each component, feel the hole in the ice, and find out how far down the water was. Everyone sat down to fish and chit-chat, and eventually screams of delight rang out as campers felt bites. A boy named Kincaid caught a large fish and held it proudly for a photo before he threw it back in. Another camper, Skyler, had one on the line but lost it right before it got to the top of the ice hole. He told everyone the story about the big one that got away. Later that day, I went snowshoeing with the green group. We removed our gloves to feel the tactile map of the trails and then set off into the woods. I snowshoed alongside Quentin, who wore his wool hat over his eyes to the middle of his nose. It made no difference to him, but might have looked funny to anyone who didn't know he was blind. Eventually, we arrived at a beautiful church on the lake with colorful stained glass windows and doors. Icicles hung down from the roof. Light hitting the icicles and windows made everything look like a light show. We had the campers feel the windows and icicles to get the whole picture. Each camper also had a chance to go and feel the big church bell and then ring it. On the way back, I noticed Elijah, who is 17, holding hands with his counselor. We always emphasize that it's not appropriate to hold hands and that campers must use either the human guide technique, in which the person with a visual impairment holds the guide's elbow, or a tether, which is a short piece of rope. In this case, Elijah said he was using the human guide technique, but because the snowshoes were so big, he and his guide kept stepping on each other's snowshoes. After some discussion, we came up with the ski pole guiding technique. Guide and camper would each hold one end of a ski pole, which was just long enough to keep them from stepping on each other's snowshoes. Everyone was happy about that solution. Elijah was in a singing mood, an adept singer. He inspired everyone on the trail to sing along with him. He knew a lot about music. We could name any musician, and he could tell us their birthday and death date if deceased, and all of their albums. He was really into rap music and knew a lot of lyrics. This memory of snowshoeing with the snow, icicles, and music was quite vivid and has stuck with me to this day. I believe it made a strong impression on this group of athletes as well. The next day, I went cross-country skiing with the Red Group on the path the snowmobilers had paved for us on the lake. I skied with Lillian, a wonderful athlete who was hard of hearing and visually impaired. Tall and slim for her age, Lillian was already a skilled swimmer, runner, dancer, and downhill skier. She turned out to be no different on cross-country skis. We started skiing with the group, but within 10 minutes, the others fell behind us, including Lillian's counselor, Abby. Abby didn't want to slow Lillian down. "It looks like you two are the same pace," she said. "I will meet you when you come back." Lillian flew across the snow and ice, and soon I couldn't keep up either. The whoosh of her skis and the click of her poles were consistent, and it seemed she could go on forever. We were enjoying the beautiful white scenery and the low wind at our backs and just started to feel warmer, but after 30 minutes we had to make our way back. Neither of us wanted to. As soon as we got back, Lillian wanted to go right out again, but other activities beckoned. I marveled at her ability to adapt and excel at each new sport she tried. In the afternoon, the group from the Central Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired set up a multi-sensory cooperative scavenger hunt in which teams had to follow clues to find bags containing various body parts belonging to Olaf, the snowman from the movie Frozen. The teams then had to assemble the snowman and decorate him with materials they found. The kids really loved this exercise, with hot chocolate waiting at the end. That night, the group Skyped in Chester Triplett, a Paralympic cyclist who became blind at an older age and fell into cycling after he was honorably discharged from the Army due to his vision loss. He spoke of his journey through early blindness, falling in love with tandem cycling, slowly meeting his goals, and now preparing for the Paralympics with a grueling training schedule. You could hear the awe in the room, every child riveted, no one speaking or moving a muscle. The campers asked wonderful questions at the end, and when the talk was winding down, Chester's voice broke. "I have to say that this talk was healing for me, and it helped me more than you will ever know. Thank you for asking me to be part of your inspiring camp." It was clear that his acceptance of his visual impairment was still a process, and the realization that he could help this group of children with visual impairments was in turn helpful to him. In the technology sessions, each group talked about how to use the computer functions related to Braille output. Navigating the auditory and Braille functions on the computer was beyond my knowledge, but I was impressed with how much the campers already knew. Their lessons had typically been held one-on-one with a vision teacher. It was gratifying to watch them now sit with other students who are blind and discuss the pros and cons of the systems they used to access the world every day. That night, they played Minute to Win It, a series of short games in which groups try to outsmart each other in completing tasks before the others do. For example, picking M&Ms out of a bowl with tweezers, or knocking over bowling pins with a stocking worn on the head with a tennis ball in the toe. The groups were loud and enthusiastic. On Sunday, we packed up and walked over the icy lake to the vans on the shore. The vans took the campers to a local ski hill Kathy had known since childhood and where she continued to run programs. One group snowshoed around the trails while the other group went skiing, and after lunch, they switched. This was a wonderful facility with highly skilled instructors, and the skiing was a huge hit. They gave the campers blind skier vests and used poles to guide them down the slope. Some campers, like Lillian, could get down by themselves. Others needed one guide, and still others needed one guide on each side to help them slalom to the bottom. In a matter of hours, campers saw major improvements in their skills. Something else remarkable happened at the first Winter Camp Abilities. A crew from HBO Real Sports captured many of the moments on video. It was the beginning of a relationship with Real Sports that would result in a short HBO special the following summer and then a longer one in 2021. Back in 2014, a woman from HBO Real Sports had contacted me after finding us on the internet and being captivated by the Camp Abilities story. We had a wonderful talk, and when she learned our 20th anniversary was approaching, she said she wanted to feature us in a segment. The crew braved negative temperatures to film the snowmobile riding, cross-country skiing, ice fishing, and snowshoeing. It took us half an hour to get our snowshoes on and start down the trail, but when we rounded the bend, there was a cameraman laying on their stomach in the snow, ready to get footage of our group. I don't know how long they had been there, but they must have been extremely cold, and yet they and the rest of the crew never stopped smiling. After that February weekend, we made extensive plans for the HBO Real Sports crew to come to our 20th anniversary at Brockport in June. We collected necessary permission for all the campers and planned a wonderful program for the week. Kosher Camp Abilities. In 2017, I was visiting Camp Abilities in Saratoga. It was their fifth anniversary, and they were very proud. There was a mother there visiting her child. She was also visually impaired. Her name was Rachel, and her son was attending camp. The campers were ice skating, and Rachel wanted to give it a try with my support. She had never skated before. She strapped on the skates and, with some apprehension, started to inch along the wall while holding tightly to my hand. I taught her how to push and glide, and she slowly started letting go of the wall on occasion. She started to gain speed and had longer periods when she let go of the wall. After 30 minutes, she was skating across the ice with her long blue skirt flowing behind her and a huge smile on her face. She loved the feeling of movement and wanted to ensure such joy was provided to children in her community. Rachel is Orthodox and part of a large Orthodox Jewish community in New York City and New Jersey. A number of individuals in this community have visual impairments due to retinal disorders. This includes children, one of whom is Rachel's son, who had attended Camp Abilities but experienced some challenges due to religious observance. Orthodox Jews eat only kosher food, observe Shabbat, and maintain separation between genders and social settings. Rachel's son had thus participated in some of the camp activities, but not all, such as swimming and dancing. After skating with me, Rachel immediately started speaking of hosting a kosher Camp Abilities for children in her Orthodox community. Having a kosher Camp Abilities would provide him and all of the children an equal opportunity to be active within parameters that aligned with Orthodox practices. I had helped set up camps in many countries whose customs and traditions differed from those I grew up with, so I knew I could make this dream a reality for Rachel, her family, and the Orthodox community, and me. I loved Rachel's passion and drive to make this happen despite so many variables to consider. Throughout the school year, Rachel and I had many meetings about where to hold the camp, what sports to offer, and how we would navigate the kosher guidelines. I recruited 5 enthusiastic and open-minded students to help with the weekend. Rachel sent me a video to show them Orthodox customs and guidelines. My students watched the video and knew to be sensitive to the customs of the Orthodox Jewish religion. They would wear long sleeves and pants, covering bare limbs, and the schedule would be minimal to accommodate Shabbat. We would eat kosher food and keep the boys and the girls groups separate. One thing Rachel and I could not figure out was if beat baseball and goalball would be permitted. The Orthodox religion does not allow one to work on Shabbat. This means that pushing an elevator button, returning on a stove, or even turning on a light are forbidden. These actions are considered work. So, does the act of pulling the pin out of the beep baseball constitute work? Rachel asked her rabbi, who said no beep baseball during Shabbat because that is considered work, but we could play goalball. So we would go swimming, do track and field, play goalball, and dance. We could play beep baseball before and after Shabbat. The groups would be divided up, and there would be a girls group and a boys group. The venue was reserved for a weekend in May for the camp was an Orthodox Jewish resort in the mountains of the Catskills. It was a beautiful large hotel with a pool, many large meeting rooms, and a large property. They served only kosher food there. My students and I arrived early on the Friday of the retreat. We got there before any of the families, so we found our rooms and settled in. We scoped out the pool, which had not been opened since the summer before, so they had to run the water and chemicals through it. Rachel and her family arrived, and we got to catch up. She introduced me to her brother, who was also visually impaired, and his family, and to her sister, who was visually impaired, and her family, and to her father, who was blind. She also had several other siblings who were not visually impaired. They consistently thanked me for coming and bringing my students. They were genuinely happy we were there and valued what we had to offer. A Shabbaton is the celebration of Shabbat, or the Sabbath. In this case, the celebration lasted the entire weekend. There were 200 people attending the Shabbaton from Orthodox communities in New York City and New Jersey. 27 participants had visual impairments, and 17 were young enough to attend camp. It is interesting that in the Orthodox religion, young adults are matched by a matchmaker. Each person who is visually impaired was matched with another person with a disability. Rachel's husband used a wheelchair, and they were great together. They had 2 sons, one who was visually impaired. He was the 3rd generation of the family with a visual impairment. After lunch, we rotated between the girls and boys groups, swimming, playing beat baseball, and participating in exercise class. Of course, per Rachel's rabbi, we played beat baseball before Shabbat. Most of the activities were new to the children, so they were excited to try the various sports. My students had to wear long sleeves and pants all weekend, and it was hot. They never complained and did a wonderful job. I had agreed to do a presentation for the families on Friday before Shabbat. Once activities were underway, I met with parents in a large room with a white curtain dividing each group down the middle. Men sat on one side and women on the other. I stayed in the middle and presented to both groups at once. I sat on a bench with no PowerPoint or handout and discussed the importance of physical activity and sports for all children. I shared some of the barriers for youth with visual impairments and how to make accommodations. Everyone seemed quite interested. When it was time for Q&A, both men and women asked questions, but they did not say their names, so participants on the other side of the curtain probably didn't know who was talking. This was a first for me, and way different, but I understood and respected the tradition. The parents then transitioned to prayer. I had told my students I wanted to join the women in their Friday night Shabbat prayers, so my students were on their own with the campers. I took out a prayer book and went through the Friday night service prayers I was familiar with. They did not have a rabbi leading a service, but each person prayed quietly to themselves. At one point, they had a rabbi go to the front of the room while we were still separated and discuss what the Torah says about helping people with disabilities. He and his wife had their own program for people with disabilities in New York and discussed what they did to fulfill their role. I felt totally comfortable with these amazing people as they welcomed me with open arms and made me feel like family. I had never had any friends who were Orthodox Jews, but can now count Rachel and her diverse family among my friends. The next day was Saturday. Everyone in the Shabbaton was going to pray in the morning, so I took my students on a hike since we were in the Catskills. The trails were beautiful, and we had an opportunity to discuss the various similarities and differences between the Orthodox culture and the one they were brought up in. They thought through the customs and began to understand the reasons behind the rules and traditions. We enjoyed a beautiful long hike up a small mountain. Once we returned, we played goalball, did track and field, and danced with the campers. The kids really liked the goalball, and the girls loved the dancing. My students did a wonderful job. It was again very hot for the field events in the grass, and they did not complain. But I did. It was so hot. At one point, one of Rachel's sisters asked me if someone could turn on the air conditioner in a room where a group of men were having a meeting. I said I would be happy to, but she said I couldn't because I was Jewish. I had to find someone else. I asked my student JJ to go in and turn the air conditioning on. Rachel's sister was thankful. From then on, JJ was an absolute favorite among the men. They talked to him with smiles all around whenever they saw him. That night, they all gave him drinks and cakes. He reveled in the attention. Our sports went on until about 6 p.m. when we freshened up to get ready for dinner. Well, I thought it was dinner. We ate a nice meal with bread and some other dishes unfamiliar to me, such as light brown dish that looked like oatmeal but was not oatmeal, and some light brown grain dishes with a unique texture. My students asked me what we were eating, and I was surprised I couldn't say because the signs in front of the dishes were in Hebrew, and I could read Hebrew because I studied it as a Jewish child, but I did not know what the writing meant. During our meal, there were prayers and presentations by various men around the room. This went on for a long time, and a bit after 9 p.m., I had to go to bed. My students were fascinated by these speeches, and the children from our kosher camp were coming over and talking to them, so they wanted to stay. This went on for several more hours. My students told me they ate a real dinner at about 10 p.m. JJ stayed up until 2 a.m. drinking and talking to the men. Unsurprisingly, the next day everyone slept in, but my students and I went for a long run. We planned to do goalball, dance, and track and field again. We ended up having a wonderful final day of kosher camp. The campers continued to set goals, challenge themselves, and show progress and achievement. They scored more goals in goalball, ran using several running guiding techniques, threw the shot put and discus further than they had before, and perfected their dance moves. The campers all thanked us for a fun weekend of sports and physical activity. I felt satisfied with the outcome of providing sports opportunities to youth with visual impairments who had not had much opportunity to participate in the past. Would they and their families find the time, space, and equipment to do these sports in the future? I hope that Rachel's wonderful passion and forward thinking would keep up the momentums. Camp abilities in the media. We were fortunate to have broadcast journalist and executive producer Soledad O'Brien with us during our 20th anniversary week in June 2015 to interview campers, staff, and families and produce a compelling story. Soledad O'Brien is founder and chairwoman of Starfish Media Group, a multi-platform media production company and distributor founded in 2013. O'Brien has appeared as a television anchor and correspondent on MSNBC, CNN, Al Jazeera America, HBO, and Tech TV. She has anchored Matter of Fact with Soledad O'Brien, a nationally syndicated weekly political show owned by Hearst Television. She also is a correspondent for HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. Soledad was calm, engaging, and enthusiastic. She and the entire film team were wonderful to work with and clearly invested in learning about the campers. Soledad went into the kids' dorm rooms to learn more about their social life. She ran with a camper named Abby and even got the sometimes shy Abby to sing. They filmed my graduate students with me doing a workshop for the parents of the athletes. They chose to feature four campers, Braden, Maddie, Annika, and Abby, each blind and each with a unique personality that could capture the audience. When the day came they wanted to interview me, I was terribly nervous. They put makeup on me, played with my hair and seat position, and spent 3 full hours working with the angles and lighting in our computer room at SUNY's Tuttle North building. Soledad asked excellent questions, and we ended up having a comfortable dialogue despite my nerves. I spoke of the need for sports for children with visual impairments, the power of camp, and the detrimental consequences of teachers not knowing how to include children with visual impairments in physical education. We filmed for over an hour, and we were done. One of the cameramen was in tears. He said to me, "Lauren, what you do is life-changing. I will be contributing to your program. There should be more camps like this for children with visual impairments." Overall, I was happy with the way it went. The film crew followed up at Maddie's house, interviewing her parents, and at Abby's new school, interviewing her physical education teachers, even going as far as to attend her first physical education classes, where she explained what she needed in order to be able to participate. Once the filming was done, we had to wait until October for the show to air. The wait felt like forever. After the show aired, I received phone calls, emails, and texts of congratulations. Fortunately, HBO Real Sports put the piece on YouTube so it could be shared on Facebook and email for people without access to HBO. Our message was loud and clear, with no tinge of pity. Children with visual impairments must have access to sports and recreation to be empowered and to be healthy. The segment also drove home the point that children must learn to advocate for themselves. HBO Real Sports replays shows all month long, so replays of our segment showed up in airports, bars, shopping malls, and doctors' offices. My friends, colleagues, and relatives took photos of the show in all of these places day and night and sent them to me from all over the United States. We had clearly got the message out there. We also received over $19,000 in donations and many more volunteers for camp the next summer. The reach of HBO Real Sports and the positive message were just what we needed. Our new college president, Heidi McPherson, watched the special and got a good idea what we do at camp. The following summer, Heidi came to the opening ceremonies and announced, "Camp Abilities is directly related to our mission and is a signature program of this university." She was impressed with the number of students, alumni, and faculty from all over the world attending the camp. She continued to come back each summer to support SUNY Brockport's signature program. The summer of 2016, we also had the NBC Morning Show host Dylan Dreyer come out and interview Andrew and his parents, Kira, Braden, and some coaches. It was a very nice, positive segment on NBC that showcased the benefits of our program. The next game-changing story for us appeared in December 2017 in Shine on Hollywood magazine. The editors had heard about Camp Abilities from Catherine Carty, the UNESCO representative for inclusive PE, sports, fitness, and recreation at the Institute of Technology, Tralee, Ireland. "There is a Camp Abilities in Ireland, and I have worked with Catherine on several projects." In addition, Ron Peck from the Blind Judo Foundation promoted Camp Abilities to the magazine. The story ended up being 20 pages long and included photos and much information about my time growing up and what led to camp. My photo appeared on the front cover. The article provided another useful avenue for us to get the word out about camp. In 2021, during our virtual camp abilities, I got another call from HBO Real Sports. They wanted to do a follow-up segment. The reporting team reached 3 of the 4 athletes interviewed in 2015 and came out to video them at their cross-country races and sport practices. Soledad came and interviewed me again, and I was not so nervous this time. I knew what I wanted to say, continuing the theme of empowerment and advocacy. Soledad convened a panel of 3 of the 4 athletes, now 6 years older, articulate, smart, and accomplished, to discuss how camp had affected their lives. I went to listen to the panel held at Braden's High School in Hilton, New York, and observed how thrilled parents were that their children were again being recognized for their accomplishments in sports. Sitting with them, I felt like a proud parent myself. The segment again aired in October and included a good portion from the 2015 segment for comparison. The new show again had a powerful effect on viewers, and again we received donations, emails, and inquiries about starting new camps. I'm so thankful to HBO Real Sports for making camp abilities and the accomplishments of the kids such a priority. Expanding camp abilities in St. Louis. In the summer of 2015, I was the tournament director of the World Series of Beat Baseball in Rochester, New York. This is the national tournament for all the best teams in the United States, Taiwan, and Canada. I had never hosted this tournament, and it was a great opportunity to introduce my students to the sport while demonstrating leadership and showing how a university can help the community. At the opening dinner on the first night, I met Wilma Chestnut, a vibrant and warm woman who was totally blind. Wilma was 61 years old and African American, with salt and pepper dreadlocks down to her bottom and a genuine smile you could see for miles. She had come from St. Louis as a volunteer for the tournament. I talked to Wilma for extended periods several times over the week. She lost her sight at the age of 18 in an attempted robbery. A book has been written about this horrific incident. She recovered and spent some time at the Missouri School for the Blind and then married and had a daughter. She lived an active life in St. Louis, competing in Paralympic cycling, track and field events, goalball, and beat baseball over the years. She still absolutely loved sports and wanted to incorporate more sports activity into her life. When I spoke with her about camp abilities, she was extremely interested. I shared with Wilma that I had been at the Missouri School for the Blind in St. Louis a few months earlier, conducting a training for teachers on how to improve sport and physical education for children who are visually impaired or deafblind. The school had showed a strong interest in hosting a camp abilities. I saw the wheels turning in her head. Over the next month, Wilma spoke with the Missouri School for the Blind, which decided to allow campers to stay on campus for free. She asked several Lions clubs to donate meals, and she lined up her local beat baseball and goalball teams to teach those sports. A friend of hers who competed in high-level judo signed up to teach the judo classes. She created a board that included the superintendent from the Missouri School for the Blind. She also secured several financial donations, including one from the Assistance League, which dispenses grants to local organizations. Wilma created a logo, developed a website and brochures, and obtained not-for-profit status. Everything fell into place, and in 2016, Wilma came to our Camp Ability Summit in Utah with Camp Abilities directors from around the world. She had received enough donations that she was able to bring customized water bottles from her camp to give to all the other camp directors. I flew into St. Louis on July 29th from Rochester, and Superintendent Jeffrey Barney picked me up and drove me to the Missouri School for the Blind. We arrived at the end of a 2-week science, technology, engineering, art, and math camp. The students were holding a fashion show with displays of beaded jewelry, statues, clay figures, bowls, and pet clothes. Some students were playing the piano, some were showing off their art, and some were pointing out the recreation equipment in the student center where the show is happening. I immediately met Allison, who wanted to talk about cats and show me her beautiful art and her cat jacket. I then met Layla, who is both blind and hard of hearing. She was going into eighth grade, she said, and she wanted to show me the beautiful jewelry she had made at camp. Layla told me she was sad because this was her last day at this school. In the fall, she would go to her hometown middle school near her house where she had no friends. The kids just don't get out of my way when I'm coming down the hall, and it's frustrating. They don't know me and don't understand me. I suggested to Layla that she talk to the principal of her new school and ask to be introduced to the students and allowed to share who she is and what she needs. She didn't feel the school would accommodate this wish. I imagined how hard it would be to attend a school where the kids don't know you, where they make mobility difficult, and maybe even make fun of you, a common story for many children with visual impairments. After our short but meaningful interaction, Layla gave me one of her beaded rainbow-colored necklaces. When I see that necklace on my jewelry tree, it reminds me to work harder to give our children opportunities to self-advocate so they are not put into difficult, negative situations. I also met 10-year-old Anastasia, who was excited to show me all the equipment in the student center. The climbing wall was half rock wall and half ladder. The entire wall rotated so you could climb and climb all day. Anastasia then showed me how the climbing rope worked. It also rotated down while she climbed hand over hand with her feet on the wall in front of her. She showed me the showdown table and then the basketball game, which had two hoops and a net on the side that tilted so balls would always come back to the shooter. The game counted down for 30 seconds, keeping track of the number of baskets made. In our tour of the school, which was established in 1851, we noticed the many upgrades. One that stood out was the impressive fitness playground, which had everything from an elliptical to a bridge made of rope to do sit-up benches, back extension posts, and pull-up bars. There were also two goalball gyms and a pool. On Saturday morning, we held orientation with the counselors and some of the specialists. One volunteer was my student, Nick Falds, who was in the Adapted Physical Education concentration and had recently done a practicum at the Perkins School for the Blind, running the outreach program as the fitness coordinator. Nick was excited about helping to start the first ever Camp Abilities in St. Louis. Wilma was there with her sister Peggy, as well as Tom Culleton, the former assistant superintendent of the school. Tom had coached goalball and track and had taken his students all over for competitions. In the course of the orientation, we reviewed the eye conditions, ages, and abilities of each camper. I was saddened to see on one child's file that he had Batten's disease, an inherited disorder of the nervous system that typically begins in childhood. Early symptoms usually appear between the ages of 5 and 10, when parents or physicians may notice that a previously normal child has begun to develop vision problems or seizures. In some cases, the early signs are subtle, taking the form of personality and behavior changes, slow learning, clumsiness, or stumbling. Over time, affected children suffer cognitive impairment, worsening seizures, and progressive loss of sight and motor skills. Eventually, children with Batten disease become blind, bedridden, and significantly mentally impaired. Discovering one of our campers had this disease was heartbreaking. I did not plan on telling anyone else, but in the end, the camper's grandmother told his counselor. I wanted the counselor to have high expectations and not to pity the camper, and in the end, he did just that, despite his knowledge of the devastating diagnosis. I am familiar with Batten's disease because one of my very first campers from 1996, Leah McFarland, had Batten's. That first year, she was a spitfire athlete, always enthusiastic, energetic, and encouraging. Then, during the next 2 years, her deterioration from the disease became apparent. She passed away a few years later. We now have a camper award called the Leah McFarland Award for a camper who displays the traits Leah had in that first year. A highlight of the week was a visit by the Lego enthusiasts of St. Louis, who brought some large structures they had made. They showed us their Lego versions of the Empire State Building, a pyramid, and the Washington Monument, as well as many other large and detailed Lego statues. On three tables sat characters from Star Wars, Star Trek, and other science fiction movies. There was a snowman and a VW bus. Each child had the opportunity to touch and really understand what the Lego creations looked like. Although the children all said they had played with Legos before, it was clear that nobody had ever really showed them how Legos could fit together to build these complex figures. The group provided big buckets of Legos so the children could make their own creations. The buzz in the room was continuous and got louder as campers learned to make new structures and call each other over to feel what they had made. 10-year-old Choopy had enjoyed Beep Baseball that day and especially loved the coach, Greg McDuffie. Choopy found two flat square pieces in her Lego box and made a Beep Baseball field to give to Greg. She was so enamored with Greg that she called him King McDuffie, and the name stuck. Thereafter, Greg was referred to as King McDuffie, or simply the King. One day, I taught yoga for an hour. I started with the typical poses, downward dog, child's pose, and cobra. The campers loved the different moves and clearly wanted more. So I decided to teach them the plank and to challenge them. I called out, "Who can plank for 3 minutes?" They all cheered, and as we got to 2 minutes and then three, a few campers dropped to the floor. I was next to a camper named Damon, and we each made it to 3.5 minutes. Kylie and Logan made it to 4 minutes and then to five. At 5 minutes, Kylie shook so hard she dropped to the floor. Logan was on a wrestling team and had done planks many times, so he continued to hold. All the campers started cheering, "Logan! Logan! Logan!" The smile on his face while he was concentrating cemented itself in my mind. Logan held the plank position for 6 minutes, and afterward, everyone congratulated him. It was an experience he will never forget, and neither will I. Logan had found something he could do that nobody else could do. His smile stayed on his face all night. That night, the Braille teacher from the school taught judo. Adnad was the alternate for the U.S. judo team for the Paralympics in Rio, so it was exciting to have him teaching the judo with two of his peers. One move they taught was the throw on the crash mat. Little Choopy threw my student Nick, and then threw Adnad, but her dream was to throw King McDuffie, and she finally did. Everyone cheered, and Choopy jumped up and down. She absolutely loved throwing the big people and decided to make that her talent show act. On the second to last day, we took taxicabs to St. Louis University for the Beep Baseball game. Some parents met us there excited to see what their children had learned over the week. Many had never watched their child play a sport and were overcome with emotion. Fortunately, because Wilma and Peggy coordinated a Beep Baseball team called the Firing Squad in St. Louis, some of the children would be able to continue playing competitively. On our last day, the campers showed off their track and field skills and played some intense and competitive goalball games. The parents and I talked about how physical education teachers don't always know what to do with their children and how the need for specialized educational material also means it costs more to educate students who are blind or visually impaired. Most parents were not aware of the American Printing House for the Blind's federal quota funds, which are pots of money set aside to pay for books, curricula, and equipment to schools who don't have to further stretch their limited budgets. With this new knowledge, parents were hopefully better able to advocate for their children's full inclusion in school. And after a week of camp, my hope was that the children were more aware of their own skills and armed with the knowledge to adapt some of the sports at their schools. Every year, each camp brings more stories worth telling. The power of expansions is that you don't stop telling the stories, you don't stop when camps get full, and you don't stop when you think there's nowhere else to go. There's always room to grow. Eventually, I saw this dream spread around the world.